Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 113. Hey, Nerdist Industries has launched a bunch of other podcasts, so if you have specific interests, maybe you might enjoy Making It with Ricky Lindholm, which sort of describes, from an actor's point of view, like how people make it in the entertainment business. The Indoor Kids with Kumail Nanjiani, Ali Baker. It's all about video games. The Questionauts, sex nerd Sandra, which she's a sex educator, so if you have questions about sex, she will answer them for you. Also, Nerdist Writers Panel, which is a bunch of super awesome film and television writers who get together and talk about their craft. I've been to these panels before. People show up with notebooks. It is deftly hosted by Mr. Ben Blacker, also of Thrilling Adventure fame. So we have a bunch of new shows, so check any one of them out on iTunes. Just enter Nerdist Industries and see what you get. I would also like to thank Carbonite for sponsoring this podcast. I'm actually a customer of Carbonite because I have lost stuff in the past, and it fucking pisses me off every time something crashes, and for whatever reason, I just didn't have it backed up on some piece of hardware. So, listen, Carbonite is access your files whenever you want. They're automatically backed up. It runs in the background. You don't have to do a thing. So when disaster strikes you, it's easy to get your files back. It's just $59 a year. That's less than $5 a month. So start your free 15-day trial today at Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Nerdist, and you will get 2 free months if you decide to buy. That is Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Nerdist. Now with this show, Mike Birbiglia returns. You know, the first time we had Birbigs on, Matt Myra couldn't be there, so we were like, you gotta come back when Myra can be there, just so everything balances out. So Mike came back, we had an amazing time, and he's just a friggin' phenomenal dude. So here we go, the Nerdist Podcast number 113 with the return of Mike Birbiglia, or Birbiglia, as we would say in Italiano. Hey, why am I saying a wee? I am not from Italy. Che cazzo fai?
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Everybody's having a podcast. We're having a podcast.
Does it work? That one does not work.
Still? Why would you turn
it on? It's on.
We were doing that before. It didn't work.
Yeah, it's cough button stuck.
I get it. You go,
the biggest
that's
lit. Mac in America.
Wow. I wish I could just leave that.
We all know that song.
He sings it every episode. It's just working out now.
Here's an interesting thing is that I found out that there is a flag code, American flag code, that was established, I believe, in the 1930s, which was essentially put in place just to make sure that people respected the flag. And it's not a law per se. It's just a code that's not enforced. But technically, you're not allowed
to profit from images of the flag. So all of the rednecks who buy flag towels, flag hats, flag mud flaps, paint flags on their trucks, that it, they're technically violating the flag code. That's technically un-American what they're doing.
My father would kind of follow that and not buy any thing, like any like American flag tie, or he would not allow it because it was disrespectful.
Big
into
Looney Tunes.
He's like, you can't read the flag.
I mean,
you can't
love, disrespect the flag. I mean, Tasmanian Devil. There's no Tasmanian Devil code.
No.
You can totally have Tasmanian Devil on, not your, here. On your tie. Bert Biggs, it's good to see you.
You too.
Welcome back.
I was just thinking about my dad. My dad is one of the smartest guys I've ever known in my whole life. Brilliant guy. Doctor with a law degree.
He doctor lawyer.
Yeah, doctor lawyer. He believes email forwards about President Obama. He'll literally, we'll be talking about politics, be completely reasonable, and he'll go, where is this guy even from?
Oh, no.
And I'm like, wait, what happened?
No.
What has happened? I don't want to like dwell on it, but it's just like.
Our parents are the same.
Yeah. I know.
But it's sort of like
your parents.
My parents do the same thing.
It's such a strange phenomenon.
I think because their generation, if they see something typewritten in any type of text, they think it's a truth.
Because and it's such a complicated issue because my dad is definitively not racist, definitively, and yet he believes these wild off the wall, and it's typewritten.
My parents left Massachusetts, went to Florida.
That's where my parents live in Massachusetts.
Okay,
where?
In Cape Cod now. They're kind of semi-retired.
Because we didn't get to cover this because when we had Mike on before, you had to work.
That's
Matt,
right. It was unfortunate. And there was actually some internet chatter that was like, oh, it's too bad that he wasn't there because it wasn't the full show.
And I just want you to know, Mike and I have been talking for months, and he's like, you know, I can't focus on work. I really need to come back Matt can be on.
Thank you, Mike.
Just so it's fair for
Appreciate
everyone.
That.
Anyway, back to your
story. Should I leave then to even it out?
Yeah, go ahead. They left Massachusetts. My parents, I felt like when I was a kid, I felt like they were very liberal in how they were sort of, you know, my mother always voted Democratic, whatever. My dad, an Army guy who, you know, went with whoever was going to be the most Army, pro-Army guy. So,
lawful neutral.
Yeah, they
left. Your father's lawful neutral. Means he's a soldier.
They left to go to Florida, and then all of a sudden they just shit, like, they went crazy. They went nuts. Like
Florida.
To the point where I'm on the phone with them.
Florida. I think all of us just need to say Florida,
Florida
once. And then
Florida.
They're, we don't even have to describe what we mean.
No. I think we did with saying Florida.
Florida. Florida. I often say Florida is America's smokehouse. That's where people don't die. They go and they just age and age and shrivel and shrivel into a people jerky, into a salty people jerky.
Yeah.
Oh, Florida.
Florida.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is.
I haven't visited them since 2006.
Can I tell you that?
I'll be doing that.
Can I tell you that it's something chemical that happens. Something chemical that happens as people get older. Because, I find my father I jokingly said to a friend of mine, like, my dad's pussy levels are going up because he's all like, I mean, you know, he was just kind of independent when I was growing up, and now he's all about family and hugs and which is very nice. But what happens as men age, my dad will be 70 this year. As men age, their estrogen levels go up and their testosterone levels drop, and so it's sort of interesting to witness emotionally what the effect of that is, where they just like that, you know. That's why grandparents are super huggy and super, you know.
Well, it's also, you know, as you get older, you can't defend
yourself. I mean, except to other races.
Yeah, exactly. But you can't defend yourself as well, so you got to rely on your, you know, friends and family a little bit more than you used to, because you can't physically defend yourself anymore.
You can't punch your family in the face.
And you get
so you have
scared. You're more scared of things, I think, you know, as you get older.
I would think you'd be less scared as you get older, because you're like, hey, fuck it, at this point, I'm already past the finish line. This is all. I'm in the bonus round. Yeah. If you make it past 80, you're in the fucking bonus round.
It's funny how you get older. It's like, I mean, I'm not old, but I'm 33 this month. And it's funny how you get older and you go, 60's not that old.
Yeah.
You know, whereas you used to be like, 60's so old.
Yeah, but when you were 17, 33 was like, I'll fucking kill myself before I get to 33.
No, I thought no way I would live to see 33.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. And now here you are. You're like, yeah, that's so bad.
I think a lot of people do that. The older they get, the more they justify that it's not that old, just to make themselves feel a little better.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. I go, 90. Not that old. He's a young 90.
He's a young 90.
he's an energetic 90.
I appreciate the, like, old like 80-year-old guys that are just still kind of drinking and hanging out?
Well, I'll tell you, some of those Florida tennis players who are 70, 80 years old could wipe me off the court.
They can't die down there.
Have you seen some of those tennis players?
Yes.
The old people playing tennis
That's
in Florida?
That's all they do.
That's all they do. They're very good.
It's a curse. They can't stop or they die.
That's right. Yeah.
The second they stop, they will. Yeah. And I've often thought, maybe when I'm 80, I'll start drinking again. Just yeah, like at that point, who fucking gives a shit?
Yeah.
Well, that's why Tom Lennon quit smoking when he did. So when he is like 60 or 70, he'll just start up again like crazy. That's what he said.
And then it'll just be a steep decline into a quick smoking dip.
Schwartzen used to do a joke about that too. Yeah. Just that when he gets old, he's just going to party so hard.
Yeah.
Well, hey, what's up, mother? That joke where he's like,
yeah.
Hey, pussies.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, I know that joke.
Keitlinger had that joke too. She's like, I don't drink a lot now because I want to be able to keep on drinking for the rest of my life. So I don't overdo it.
Yeah.
Just so I can continue to do it.
Oh, Keitlinger. I love her.
You know what's crazy is yesterday, I'm a little bit of a podcast whore. I interviewed Marin for his WTF podcast for his 200th episode. I interviewed him.
You interviewed him for his show.
Yeah. And what I'm discovering is there's a lot of podcast competitiveness.
Really?
Is there?
Yeah. In the sense of, you know, we were talking about he was upset that certain people didn't invite him onto their pod. Has he been on here?
Yeah, he's been on here.
Yeah. Have you been on there?
I went on his show when it first started, and then he just asked me to come on again.
Yeah.
So I'll go on again.
It's like the podcasts are like the Los Angeles equivalent of stage time.
I guess so, but I feel like there's a camaraderie. I think there is. I've done all the other ones, you know, that I wanted to do, and all those guys, you know, like a bunch of those guys have done mine, and it's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't.
Maybe we're in the boom, like the late 80s stand up comedy boom.
There is a bubble. But I just feel like, you know, everyone's, you know, all these people are rushing to make podcasts now, and then, you know, but after a little while, they do take work.
It's a lot of work. And so
I feel it's the same thing with when people complain about, like, there's too many stand ups. I'm like, write it out, because people who don't really care about it are going to fall off when it starts to get hard.
That's true.
So if you can stick it out, you'll be ahead of like 98% of everyone else out there.
Yeah.
I remember. Do you remember when we first met?
Was it in New York?
Yeah.
Yeah, in 2001, maybe.
Or so. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Luna Lounge.
At Luna Lounge. Yeah, yeah. Was it a Monday night show?
Yeah.
It's a fucking it's called Eating It. It's since closed down.
But we met at that. It was so funny because I remember, because you were on television before that.
Yes.
You were on Singled Out.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you were on?
Yep.
And it was so funny to see your stand-up in contrast to what your television presence was. You were like doing this really edgy, like political stand-up. It was really interesting. And then your television show was like this, like crazy.
Like a frat party.
Yeah, it was like a frat party.
It was like my television show was like a date rape.
Yeah. For the senses. Date rape for the senses.
Yeah.
And I remember just being so confused. I mean, I was so new to show business. I was like, but how can that be the same person?
I know,
as that
and that was also the same place I met Marin for the first time.
That's right.
And he was so shitty to me because he was shitty to everyone, but he hated the fact that he thought I was a TV person who was trying to do stand up. And the reality was I had done stand up
the other way around
before television. It was the thing I always wanted to do, and I fucked around with it in college a little bit, and then I got lazy with it because I started working on TV. And then after the show went off the air, and I'm like, okay, I'm ready to go back to stand-up. It still scared the crap out of me, but I totally understand why. I totally understood why, because I would get that way sometimes. You're like, oh, that's cute. That TV guy's trying stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, but.
No, but you were great.
Oh, wow,
and it was just confusing.
how is that the same thing?
Florida is how I justified it.
Yeah.
I love that show.
Dude. Florida.
What if Florida were just the word you use to describe a paragraph of text that you don't understand?
Florida.
Yeah.
Like a
it's all Florida to me, man.
Like a contract.
Florida.
Florida.
Where if you don't understand something in the margin in the red, you just draw the shape of Florida next to it.
But then everyone just think you're drawing a dick on stuff.
Yeah. No. Look
which
at
is
the
fine
craggy.
Too.
Fine too. I actually think it matches up perfectly.
Well, actually, the dick is what you draw when you think something's really awesome. You draw a boner. You're like, wait, is this Florida? Or
is that
boner?
An upside down Florida?
Well, it's kind of a Florida boner. I don't get it, but I'm very excited
about
it.
That seems like a good drinking game. Florida or boner?
Yeah. You guys play Florida or boner? Yeah. I might name this episode Florida or boner.
Florida or boner. Florida is Texas with a beach. Has anybody ever said that?
No, I was actually trying. I was thinking in my head about how it's ridiculous because it's like, you know, you think of Florida, it's like, oh, there's so much beach. Yeah. It's mostly beach.
Yeah.
It's got, you know, a lot. But it is the furthest thing from it when you go there. It is more south than the other fucking states.
I always remind
above
people that Florida is south of Georgia and Alabama.
It is. Well, because people, you know, it's the
south.
Same thing. It's the same thing
yes,
in California.
It is south.
People have this misconception because they think of California as being L.A. or San Francisco, and they think of Florida as being Miami.
Right,
or maybe Orlando. When the truth of the matter is, the majority of both of those states are rednecks.
West Palm, Naples,
the Redneck Riviera,
yeah, Bakersfield.
Well, I moved to Florida for 6 days. Like,
and then
I tried.
Then you went back.
Yeah. Moved for 6 days.
You went the distance. You went for the full 6 days.
My stuff is there. I bought a plane ticket.
You committed.
Back.
You
Eight
committed
seconds,
for
6 days.
You walked, committed for six sevenths
wore,
of a week.
I remember going up to the ticket counter, saying to the lady, "I'd like a ticket to Logan Airport in Boston," and she's like, "Okay, round trip." I was like, "No."
Wow.
I like that. So day one, I don't know about this place. Day two. Well, day three, I don't think this is going to work out.
Florida was so bad, I moved back to where they filmed The Fighter.
What was so bad about Florida that you had to leave immediately?
It was much worse than I anticipated as far as...
Heat.
Heat, not so much. It wasn't so much the heat. It was just the idea of... it's flat. That gets to you in a weird way for me.
Yeah.
It's just so flat.
It's very flat.
Everything's flat. And then I just realized that my days, like, at the time, I was still going to college, and I'd gotten there, and I realized it was the summer, and I realized that my days would be nothing other than going to this Barnes & Nobles that was nearby.
You're going to Barnes & Nobles?
And drinking coffee, and it was just the miserable thing. My parents were like, maybe you get a job at Disney or fucking SeaWorld.
But you get yourself a Starbucks outside of Barnes & Nobles?
Go to Starbucks and...
No, get yourself a Starbucks at the Barnes & Nobles. So Disney was your option.
I'm laughing, by the way, at the inaccuracy of the impersonation.
I'm not laughing at all.
Maybe you need a Starbucks. Maybe you need a Starbucks.
Dude, you're going to Starbucks?
You're
going to
get a Starbucks over there?
Nah, kid, you got to go to Dunkin'.
You got to go to Dunkin'.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah.
What town did you grow up in?
Lowell.
Oh, I grew up in Shrewsbury.
Oh.
Outside of Worcester.
Outside of
Worcester.
But yeah, no, it was just a miserable, miserable place, and it was horrible. It was a horrible thing. I don't recommend anybody move to Florida.
People really care for Florida.
Yeah.
Because on paper, like on LeBron paper, James. Florida looks great. On paper, you got the beach.
No income tax.
You got no income tax.
Yeah.
It's a tax shelter. It's
they can never take away your property, right? Isn't that another thing in Florida?
There's no eminent domain?
Probably.
Yeah.
For the sake of argument,
let's
sure.
Say, yeah, why
sure.
Not?
Yeah, yeah.
One
they can't take away
Florida.
Your property.
Hey!
It's like any extreme of like liberal or conservative talk radio is just like, yeah, we'll say that shit.
Sure.
Yeah, we'll just make up some shit.
I'm here to take your property. You can't
never hear on those stages.
All right.
But this is right, right?
And
sure.
They can't take away your property. You know, if you shout it enough, it becomes true on the radio.
I'll give you that.
Yeah.
But Florida has NASA, which is great. I love NASA.
Yeah.
Just in case they're listening, I want to take it away from me.
Cape Canaveral.
Cape Canaveral. I'm looking forward to that.
You'll probably already have been there by the time we put.
Well, then they can't. Well, fucking Florida sucks. Even Cape Canaveral's shitty.
But Florida, do you, Chris, play Florida?
I played Fort Lauderdale.
Okay.
I played the Improv in Fort Lauderdale, which is a very nice club, but
sure.
The vibe, you know, it's basically in a like a City Walk style.
Yeah.
You played
it. Of course.
It.
They're taking, well, City Walks are taking over America.
City Walks are taking over America. So
yeah,
there's
14 in every town.
It's on
public, private.
It's on an Indian gaming, Indian gaming land. So there's a Hard Rock Hotel. Everyone's in Vegas mode. And that's Vegas mode. And again, the club is beautiful and the people there were very nice. But Vegas mode is very hard for me to digest.
Mm-hmm.
And
what do you mean by Vegas mode?
Vegas mode, like it's.
Oh, they're turning over the room fast.
No. Everyone's in Vegas mode. Like, hey, I can do whatever the fuck I want. I'm in Vegas. Fuck everybody. I'm gonna take my dick out.
Yeah, like the price of the hotel room.
Smoke in that room.
Yeah, the price of the hotel room is your price of admission of just being a complete asshole.
And people coming back to their rooms at 3 o'clock, they're like, oh my god, you saw that girl's tits! Like just as loud as you could possibly. Yeah. Just the most.
Which is really what your show is all about.
Yeah, it really is. I like to hoot it up about the ladies and their jugs, I think they're called. I know. And it's you know, the vibe of it, it was a little nerdy.
You whoop people up. This is what I hear about your live
shows. I like to whoop people into a frothy frenzy.
Yeah.
Welcome to whooping comedy style.
You guys ready to laugh? I can't hear you.
Somebody needs some tequila. You know, I just make a lot of references to things they know. And
hurricanes are half price when Hardwick's on stage.
When you go on the road quite a bit.
Yeah, most weekends.
I see your schedule sometimes on the internet. And what's the breakup at this point when you tour in terms of the people who are coming to see you and the people who are going to the comedy club?
Now I'm doing like small theaters, and so it's all nerds.
It's all you.
Yes, yeah, everyone who's there comes on purpose, which is great.
If for any comedians listening, that I think is the best thing that can possibly happen.
Yes,
in your career.
They want to be there.
That to me is better than having fucking sitcom or movie career or anything.
Yeah.
Because when you do stand up and people come to see you on purpose, unbelievable.
Yeah, it is.
So, it's euphoric.
You know who goes against that? Norm MacDonald says he hates doing theaters and he loves actually just the club atmosphere for comedy.
Huh.
Yeah, he had some interview, I think, for CC Insider or something like that, but he was just talking about how, you know, he needs, like, it's like if they make an effort to pay attention, he likes it better. He likes trying to be able to pull them in as opposed to everybody just sitting straight and looking right at him.
Yeah.
He likes people around tables. He likes people wrapping around the stage.
I just love the vibe of everyone. It's like, you guys know why you're here. I know why you're here. We already have a shared bank of...
It's like an old friend.
Yeah, we have a relationship already. Yeah. Yeah, I don't have to spend the first 3 minutes trying to tell you who I am to justify the next 45 minutes.
Let's be friends now. Listen to this.
Yeah. So I do appreciate I do appreciate that. And I was in New York. I've actually been to New York like 7 times since last year, but I was walking down 7th Avenue, I think, and right around the West Village.
Around 7 p.m.
I think I saw it was your theater.
That's where it is.
Because I took a picture Barrow of Street, my girlfriend's Dev. Boyfriend.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yes, I was so excited.
You have a theater for that show?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's the Barrow Street Theater, and we have what Chris is talking about is out front is a big, you know, sign. It's a big poster of the show.
That's incredible.
The show. And it's
really cool.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Thanks. Yeah. And we've been running for about 4 months and it closes, I don't know when you'll post this, but June 25th.
Okay.
Yesterday.
Hey! I'm sorry it closed. No, that's good though. You planned
what
on
a closing night gala that was.
Yeah, no, we could keep going, but I'm shooting a film soon. So
you're shooting the film version
of Sleepwalk with Me.
With Ira Glass, right?
He's producing, and I'm directing and starring in it.
I love seeing your name in the This American Life app.
Is it?
It talks about the other contributors.
Oh.
And your name is in there.
Oh, that's cool.
That's really cool. I mean, like, what's so interesting, because the show route, how do you find when you're doing that? So when you do that show for 4 months, Do you approach it the same way as stand up, where you're constantly tweaking it, or do you set it and you're like, that's it?
Constantly
tweaking. Do you set it and forget it?
I'm constantly tweaking, but in previews, which is what they call it, the first 3 weeks or so, and it's constant changes.
Yeah.
You know? And in January, I went to Australia and Montreal and San Francisco to the Sketch Fest.
Yep.
And that was like constant changes. And now it's like, you know, little tweaks.
But is that just a...
Seven shows a week. You know, it's a full theater week.
I mean, that's, go ahead, Jonah.
Oh, no. I mean, do you find yourself changing it like a normal live comedy show? Where
I can't.
Just
I can't because it's very specifically designed. So like, even if I improvise, it's within this construct that I have to understand that I can't give something away. Like, for example, like, you know, how do I describe this? I'm married now, but in the show, the whole show is about how I decided to get married, you know, and so, you know, because you know, I make this joke in the show, like, for a long time, I decided, like, I'm not going to get married until I'm sure that nothing else good can happen in my life, you know, and I was determined to not get married. And the whole show is about how I was, how right I was about that. Like, I didn't believe in the idea of marriage, and the ending of it is I get married, and so I don't wear, like, a wedding ring in the show and all that kind of stuff.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, no, I know.
No,
but
it's fine.
But in the, you know, so when I improvise, you know, if you're in a comedy club or at a theater, and it's just free association, you'd maybe mention your wife, or maybe right. mention people who you're close with, or mention something, you know, that's off the top of your head. And you kind of can't do that within the construct of a show with a narrative as such. Yeah. It's kind of a boring concept, but it's true.
No, yeah, I get it. It's easier. You can derail easier in a comedy club because you can just jump to whatever. I mean, like, yeah. it's only as linear. I mean, like, you can make your set whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this doesn't have to be the closer. I can move this, and
that's
I can move
right.
this. It's very modular that
and,
way.
And also the way that my director Seth Barish and I build my shows, Sleepwalk With Me and My Girlfriend's Boyfriend, the same way, is that every single thing that I say in some way contributes to the final line of the show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great.
So if you just say something, you know, improvising. If it doesn't contribute to what the ending is, it's possibly watering down the ending.
And that's really interesting because the way that I keep, you know, jokes fresh that I've been telling for a while is that like 30 or 40% of what I do is just I talk to people in the audience because mm-hmm. it's fun. But you're doing 7 shows a week, which is hard. I mean, like, you know, those weeks at comedy clubs by the second or third show on a Saturday night and your brain just feels like it's melting in your skull.
Yeah.
How do you maintain the same level of enthusiasm when you're doing pretty much exactly the same show, you know, for 4 months straight?
A lot of it's like boring actory stuff, like going to exercise and classes and things like that, like, you know, the day of show mm-hmm. and doing things to you know, relax before, you yeah. know, the show ultimately. And a lot of times two shows, you know, for a while there it was Saturday 4 and 8 p.m., Sunday 4 and 8 p.m. And also I get really, you'd have to see the show, but I get really riled up during the show. So it's actually very physical. So it's like a big workout. It's, yeah.
And you just sort of shut off in between shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
To conserve your energy.
Yeah.
You got a lot of great food right there next to you on that on 7th Avenue, though.
Yeah, there's some good stuff there.
You got that.
You got Bleecker Street Pizza. You got our...
You got a Two Boots right near there?
You got a Two Boots there. You got John's Pizza.
Yep. You got a Sushi Samba, which is pretty good.
You got Hummus Place.
There's Two Boots in L.A. now.
You got AOC.
Yeah, Echo Park.
Yeah.
They brought the Two Boots out
They
to
brought
LA.
Two Boots out?
Yeah, it's in
Echo Park.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's not the same because it's not the same water.
It's not the New York water.
Yeah.
But they have that the cornmeal crust, which, you know, and the same like the Mr. Pink and stuff like that. So
last time... We did this. It was at the hotel. I was at my hotel.
Yeah.
Which is somewhere. I don't know where.
You were at the W
or something. W, yeah.
And
Sunset
then,
and Vine.
And no. I Hollywood remember, this is what I remember from it. I remember thinking, we should just continue. We should just go a couple hours.
I would have loved to have gone a couple hours.
Yeah.
I always tend to keep it around. Well, tonight you and I both have to get on planes. Yeah. But I always keep it to around an hour because I just feel like... I don't want to, now that we're doing 2 episodes a week, I don't want to overwhelm people. You know, like, I was talking about this last night with someone where even stuff that you love, if you feel like, oh, my DVR is full of stuff that I love, now it feels like a chore. Now it feels like I have a responsibility to get through all this stuff that I'm following.
Yeah.
And so I don't
you don't want to put that on people.
I don't want to put that on people, and I don't want them to look at, and I feel like if you look at a podcast and you see the time says, like, 2 hours and 28 minutes, then you're at, like, for me, I would go,
oh, I know what show that is. I used to be on.
No. I know.
I feel that way about it. Even if my friend sends me a web video, and so, you know, I press play and then I see how long it is. And if it's over 3 minutes, I just usually just don't even bother. I don't have the time to watch someone else's web video.
Then I sit and contemplate it for 6 minutes when I could have just watched the video.
But this is the thing that I because I interviewed Maren last night, I couldn't talk about myself at all. You know, I don't interview people usually. Yeah. And so I actually do want to tell people who are listening to, if they like me or if they're familiar with me at all, please, please, please get my new album, Sleepwalk With Me,
mm-hmm.
which just came out and is on iTunes. I'll tell you why they should get it.
Okay.
This is the first time I've said this. There was a New York Times article a couple weeks ago about, I think, Pandora.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what Pandora is. I don't understand what these things are.
It's a music streaming service that that creates playlists around music that you like.
And yeah.
Now they have comedians on there.
So there was a thing where they were launching a comedy channel or whatever, and their reference of the comedy business, the record business, was that this week in Billboard comedy, Mike Birbiglia's album was number one,
hey,
which is a nice thing to be. How many albums did he sell?
No.
Guess.
Oh, number one on Billboard?
Number one on Billboard.
14,000?
That's your guess?
That's my guess.
5,000.
That's what I was going to say.
You and me.
No, you already guessed.
I did.
Okay.
All right. 8,000.
I said 14,000.
Oh. What was yours?
5.
2,700.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Number one.
But
number one,
well, that's
album.
That's how that band, the Melvins.
2,700.
I always,
and it was in the New York Times as an example of how the comedy business is over.
But it's not that the comedy business is over. It's,
or
it's
the comedy music, the comedy record business is over.
It's, but what happened is,
and I'm so proud of this album. Like, it's the album that I basically is the accumulation of like my entire life of wanting to make the perfect comedy album, and it's that. And at this point, like, but, you know, it's been out for a month, and now it's like 7,000 records or something like
I'm
that.
I'm sure, but like,
but
you gotta, that's good. That's
still, it's so few.
It's probably 50 times that the amount of people have received it and listened to it and enjoyed it.
Though. Yeah.
That's the tricky part, is that the people downloaded it and then they show it to their friends.
I mean,
and that's just kind of.
I would look at our manager, Alex, and we would look at the Billboard top 10 charts for comedy albums. And it almost put me off comedy a couple of years ago, just because there were like three that sold the shitload, like, you know, Dane Cook and the Blue Collar Guys, mm-hmm. and then Hedberg. And so you would see like a million albums sold, and then another a million albums sold, and then like numbers five is 60,000. Like it was an insane gap.
Yeah. Well,
and then comics that you love, like guys that you think, oh, everyone knows them, 13,000.
Yeah,
like
sure.
People just don't, you know.
Well, that's you know, something I was mentioning earlier was that, you know, like the Melvins, who have been around for over 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, they
love the Melvins.
Yeah, they're great. But they've never been anywhere close to being on the Billboard charts. Their last album got on the charts, and it's because they made it kind of a special edition. You know, it was like on vinyl and stuff like that. And a lot of people bought it. Not a lot, but a lot for them. And they finally got onto the Billboard charts, and they used it in an article as an example to talk about how bad the rest of the music industry is doing.
The Melvins,
the Melvins are fucking stoked, because it's like it's still like, you know, there's people still buying their records.
But it's funny because it's like someone at a party recently was making fun of a band. I'm not going to say who the band was, but they were like, it was popular band. In popular indie band, and it's like, this guy was like so cheap, and I'm like, dude, you sold so many records, and I was just like, I don't know how many records they're selling. You know what I mean? It's like, let's say it's a super popular indie band, they sell 500,000 records.
Mm-hmm.
There's five people in the band. Split that five ways.
Yeah,
you put the upfront recording costs into that. They, you know, I don't know, $200,000-$300,000 they probably to make that album.
Yeah.
And those guys. It's a hit album, probably a number one top 10 album. Yeah. And those guys probably make like $35,000
maybe. Yeah. It's all in the touring business. The money is all in the touring business.
It's all in the merchandise.
The other downside with comedy is that, unlike an album of music where you can go through and pick a couple tracks that you want, it's not like a specific bit on a track is going to play somewhere and people go, I'm going to go buy that track.
Yeah.
Like you buy an album as you buy a comedy album as a whole because you want to sort of listen to the arcs. You don't want to listen.
The industry is really like Tommy Walter is one of my friends who was like one of the founding members of the Eels, and he's Abandoned Pools is pretty much him. And then all of a sudden I saw him with me working at the fruit store.
Mm-hmm.
At the tech sport.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I worked at Benway Records in Venice Beach, I worked with the bass player of the Muffs, Ronnie.
Was the fruit stand was that an example of him doing well or not doing well? I'm trying to understand the story better.
He fixes computers at a.
He doesn't do it anymore.
We don't say what the store is because we don't want to get in trouble. It is a fruit themed computer store chain.
I didn't understand.
No, he did so well that he started his own fruit stand. That was always his passion.
Yeah, yeah.
But
you were saying the lead singer from the.
Not the lead singer. The bass player of the Muffs. And the Muffs, like, you know, they never really popped off that big. They were in, like, what, a Sprite commercial and then the movie Father's Day. But they were, you know, they were on the radio here and there in the 90s.
When you're talking about a business where a lot of, especially the music business, where even when it was doing really well, there were bands that were still not making any money because the record labels were expensing them for everything.
All of Motown, yeah.
And so now a business that still expenses people for everything is not making enough money, and then people are really not. It's like when they did behind the TLC Behind the Music from like 10 years ago, where they were like, here's what you have to understand.
Well, and the MC Hammer one too.
Yeah, so for every album that's sold, we get this, and then people think we're crazy millionaires, and it just doesn't work that way.
Well, that's what you hear, you always, that's what surprised me a lot as I grew older, is that these indie bands are like huge, and they're like, you know, they come to LA and they sell out, you know, big theaters and stuff like that. But I was like, why don't they move to like bigger cities? They're all still living in their small towns. It's because if they stay there, they can like live comfortably.
That's right.
You don't just, ever think, like, you have these grand ideas about how you want to tour and the kind of show you want to put on. It's like, you know, like when I bring Furman with me, sometimes they'll go, we need a screen. We want to do video. And they're like, all right, well, it's $1,200 to rent the screen.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure people tell you this all the time. And they go, Mike, you should do a tour with like four other comics that you all love. And I was like, yeah, but then, you know, like, you know, you go to this theater, it costs like $5,000 just to turn the lights on in the theater.
Yeah.
So we have to get to that point just to break even.
Yep.
Then we got to pay everyone. It's just like everyone loses money with the travel.
Yeah. Then it's merch. You got to do it in merch.
Yeah.
Make that money there.
I guess.
Merch never. Yeah. My fans don't like merch, I don't think.
Do you have a merch friendly stickers?
You know what I'm finding
is a merch friendly fan base?
I do. Like I've just started bringing like these Nerdist shirts on the road the podcast logo.
Can I get one of those?
Yeah, sure you can. And people buy them. I mean, I always go out. I mean, I don't care if people buy shirts from me or not, but I'll go out and sign stuff and take pictures. And I love it because it wasn't that long ago when no one would come out and see me, so I'm super psyched.
But we were talking about this the other day about merch table. You got to have a merch table at your shows, and I think people would buy stuff. You know, stickers and shirts, and you know, you can the Hard and Firm CD, stuff like that.
Used Myra Kleenexes and whatnot from the show. All of your broken iPhones.
A little jar of tears from Myra.
So when did the Sleepwalk With Me album come out?
Came out, I think, end of April.
Yeah, and do you sell it when you're on the when?
I haven't been on the road.
Oh, you haven't been on the road?
I've been doing Girlfriend's Boyfriend in New York. But I'm basically going on tour. We're touring My Girlfriend's Boyfriend starting in January. I'm going to be touring it for a year.
Whoa! Jesus.
Yeah, I'm touring
like
the
nonstop?
Same show.
Like nonstop? Are you going to get to do any other stand-up?
No, pretty much that.
I guess not,
because
you don't want to cannibalize your show.
Yeah, exactly. And then at the end of the year, I'm going to shoot it as a comedy special, record the album, and move on to the next hour.
Sell another 50.
You've always been you have a really great sort of business view of comedy, just in terms of, you know, I put up this show, I do it for a while, it gets popular, then I take it around the country, then I shoot it as a special, and then I put it out.
Yeah, that's new. This is the first time I've ever done it.
Yeah, I know. You're the guy that wrote like it was a job, which is what you should, you know, if you can do that, you should do that.
Yeah, I mean, but this was actually the first time where like I had a show and my agent, Mike Berkowitz, who is...
I know Mike.
Yeah, Mike is the best.
Great guy.
He's the best agent.
Mike Berkowitz.
Honestly, if anyone... I don't even know if this is pertinent to anyone's life listening, but for my money, he is absolutely the best at what he does. He's a booking agent. Mm-hmm. He books Louis C.K. and Craig Ferguson and Kevin Hart and Aziz Ansari and me and a bunch of people.
So all of those listening, have him be your booking agent.
Done.
He's
Mike Berkowitz's email.
But he actually was the person who was like, oh, you have to take out the show as is. And so that's what we're doing.
And I'm sure you noticed that when you started the second show, it was probably a bit easier than when you started the first show, right? I mean, you have a huge following now.
It's different. Yeah. This American Life people are really nice.
Yeah.
The moth people are really nice. The people who listen to this podcast from when I was on last time, I still get emails about that.
Well, it's what's shocking to me is when I think, okay, when I go to New York, I can go do two shows there, but then I can't go back there for 6 months or 9 months or a year. And, you know, you've got people coming out to see your show when you've done it 200 times.
Yeah, yeah. No, like Sleepwalk with Me, we had 35,000 people come see the
Jesus
show.
Jesus Christ.
And who do you take on the road with you? Like a stage director, a guy in charge of lights?
I have a tour manager and my director Seth Barish comes sometimes.
You're gonna get a bus? You're gonna get a tour bus?
Probably do bus. Yeah, I've done a bus a bunch of times. Do you do a tour bus?
I've never done a tour bus, and I've always wanted to do a tour bus because I don't go out a big chunk at once. I just go back and forth and back and forth.
Spot dates.
It's kind of fun, although man, the drivers are real characters.
They got stories.
Oh man, do they have stories? You'll hear stories about gun shooting, you know, about a lot of country act.
You're
drunk.
A docile comedian, like yeah.
We always rent a bus out of Nashville because that's one of the big hubs for tour buses because it's Music City, and they have a lot of country singers who are in tour buses, and a lot of rappers. And man, do they have some stories about country singers and rappers. And the guys will say, I mean, these bus drivers will tell you these stories about rappers, and that they're not shy with the racism. I mean, the things that they will say, I'm just like, are you saying this right now?
Ironic racism or is this real racism?
And the homophobia also is just like, and we would have long, I mean, I'll, for the sake of anonymity, I'll call him Donnie. We had a bus driver named Donnie.
His real name was Donald.
But, nice.
And Donnie would say, you know, just the most offensive things you could say about black people and gay people and stuff. And we would just have long talks with people like, is that how you really feel about this? I mean, is that, you know, and he'd be like, yeah, rah, 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 you know, and be like, all right. You know, like there's not much you can, when someone's 65 years old.
You're not going to change
his
mind.
And they're racist and homophobic. You're not going to,
you also don't want to rile up the guy who's making sure you don't die while you're sleeping
in
the back of the bus.
Yeah.
You want him to question everything he stands for while he's just midnight drive, you know?
You're like, well, you and I will be having less talks.
Yeah, and it's such a strange thing, you know, with racism. You just go, well, because I always say this whenever people go, you know, you say because of, you know, let me phrase this right, because I'm trying about
Florida.
Regarding Obama,
right?
A lot of times, people who are on the right who are very anti-Obama will go, well, you're just saying that people who don't like him are racist, but how, you know, they're not racist. And you go, okay, well, some of them are, right? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
like, you know, like, and whenever I say that, I always go, well, okay. And they'll go, how do you know? And I go, okay, well, imagine, I go, before he was elected president, there were racist people in the country, right?
Yeah.
And I get them to agree to that. And I go, okay, so imagine you're one of those people. And you're so racist that, like, you would be upset if there was a black guy who was your waiter at a restaurant. And all of a sudden, there's a black guy who's the president of the United States.
Your commander
in chief. Do you know how mad that would make you?
Yeah.
You would go nuts. You would be marching in the streets. And they did, and they're called the Tea Party.
Yeah.
it's those philosophical, if P equals Q, but Q doesn't eat, like, all racists are Obama haters, but not all Obama haters are racist.
That's what Bill Maher always makes that point about Republicans. He goes, you watch Bill Maher.
Real time, yeah.
I liked your episode with him here.
Oh, it was so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so much fun.
That's a good one people should listen to if they haven't already. But he makes
that
point.
That
he goes, you know, all... I'll check that out.
They don't listen to the show.
No, I'm talking about the people. He always makes that point on his show. He goes, not all Republicans are racist, but all racists, probably Republicans.
Well, I mean, just ideologically, you wouldn't fall liberally, really, if you're racist, because many of the platforms would not be congruent with your core belief system.
I want more government, but I don't want them to help the blacks.
you just wouldn't. There's not racist liberals like I am here. I say organic food, but not for black people. You're like, what are you talking about? I think we should tax the rich, but not give it to black people. Like, that's not really. Yeah,
that's the thing that's really confusing to me is when. But it's interesting. Like, well, that's one of people's arguments is they'll go. Well, Obama's just going to help black people. You know, that's like one of the arguments that people make, sometimes subtly, sometimes not so subtly, that he'll help, quote unquote, his own people. But it's interesting because, like, that's kind of for older people, that's how people think. People who are 70 or 80 years old, that's how things always were. They would vote for the Irish guy if they were Irish. They would vote for, the Italian guy if they were Italian. Yeah. And I think that's how they view the Obama presidency is, he's representing black people, which is funny because he's really not.
Yeah.
Right. All the black leaders are so frustrated with him all the time.
Yeah.
He's from Hawaii. He's just a dude from Hawaii.
Yeah, he's some dude from Hawaii.
Yeah.
That's
where I grew up.
But
so
who is he?
Yeah.
Who is this man?
I can't imagine, the idea of, you go into the presidency and you're like, I have all these ideas. It's sort of like when you're a kid and you go, I'm going to be a teacher someday, but I'm going to be a cool teacher. I'm not going to be like these dickholes who stand over there. And then you get older and you start to realize, like, well, there are policies that you can't change. And then there are things and there are all these different mechanisms in place that are tugging in all these different directions. And you can't make everyone happy. And you still have to do A, B, and C. And it doesn't really work the way you... It doesn't work linearly or logically where you go, well, I'm just going to change that one thing and everything will be great.
And that's why the Afghanistan thing, at least for me, is frustrating, because you thought that he'd come in and he'd get out of these insane wars, and then he doubles down in Afghanistan, and you're just, as a supporter of Obama, I'm just like, oh, wow.
What happened? Yeah. What are you doing to me?
So frustrating. But I have to say, and maybe this is really... hypocritical, but you know how during the Bush presidency you'd see guys who would defend him, and they wouldn't really have an intellectual argument. They'd just go, I just like him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's how honestly that's how I feel about Obama. I just go, he's smart,
mm-hmm.
and he seems very reasonable, and he's able to speak about the things that he's talking about without. I mean, they always joke that he's looking at a prompter. I've seen him in hundreds of interviews where he's not on a prompter, and
the guy clearly can speak.
Yeah, he knows what he's talking about. The thing that was always frustrating for me about Bush is that you'd go, I don't think he knows the words he's saying.
Doesn't
right.
He?
Like, I don't know if he's familiar with the terms he's speaking.
And now
it's just this guy telling him right before. He's like, these are the things. All right. Got it. Are you sure? Yeah.
But, what's interesting is, I wonder.
But I've become that with Obama, which I'm a little embarrassed about, where I'm like, he's not perfect, but he seems like a smart guy.
But there's there's a certain, he has a certain statuesque presidential quality about him. And I think people are generally going to vote for the guy that they think looks like like when people are on the fence.
Yep.
And so, like, as I was watching the Republican,
here comes Mitt Romney.
Well, exactly. Mitt Romney, it almost doesn't even matter what he says.
He's like a cartoon president.
He looks like a cartoon president. And then you look at poor Pawlenty and you're just like, oh, he doesn't really, it's like
or Ralph Nader. We're not going to vote for our uncle with a twitch.
Yeah. Was it Warren Harding? There was like the one president was just like literally one of the worst presidents we've ever had, but he was tall and handsome and, and people were like, oh, that guy looks like the president. He looks like the archetypal president.
Well, that was apparent during the election between Nixon and Kennedy. And people who watched the televised debates
were very
adamant about how they're like, oh, Kennedy clearly won.
Mm-hmm.
That handsome guy won.
Yep.
But everyone that listened to it on radio, which a large portion of people still did at the time, were convinced that Nixon came out on top of those debates.
You know what that says, guys? Our president's got to be fuckable. President's got a fuckable president.
I would totally fuck Mitt Romney.
I want a hot person to tell me bad news as much as I can. That's how I want to take it.
I liked Romney when he was the governor of Massachusetts. Like he got universal health care in Massachusetts put through. And, you know, he was very tan, which I don't understand because I saw him in the winter.
His skin, he's pearly, just constantly.
Like, no, we buried a Marine that died in Iraq at the funeral home, and he came to the wake, you know?
Really?
Yeah, and he looked great doing it.
Listen, I don't, you know, for whatever, and I do, to a degree, I do know, I do have an understanding of some of the things that the Mormons believe in, and
you've seen Book of Mormon, so you know.
I've not
you
seen
know
Book of
basics.
Mormon. I wish I had seen Book
so
of Mormon.
Good.
But you know, date a girl who comes from a Mormon background, but is not herself. But the most pleasant people you could ever.
I love going to Salt Lake City.
Always people and smiling at you, and friendly. They'll have you in their home.
When I go to Salt Lake City, I will talk to the, I forget the theater's name. There's a theater there that's right near a college, and it's beautiful, 2,000 seat theater. And whenever I'm there, I'll talk to the ushers, you know, for like an hour or 2 hours, I'll talk to them about. I'll be like, oh, explain this part of Mormonism. Explain this part, and I'm telling them I think this is crazy,
right?
But I love talking about it, and I really
you know. And then some people
and they're very reasonable, and they're lovely people.
And and some people, you know, like the people are like, yeah, but then you know, like they have sex with underage girls and they marry like five.
Right.
Like, well, yes, some of them do that,
right.
But
the crazy ones who live in the forest.
There are crazy sex everywhere. There are crazy people everywhere.
Yeah.
We just don't have a label for all of them. Some of them we just say they're fucked up.
That's just the forest edition of Mormons.
Yeah, that's a small sect.
Yeah, but you're talking about the forest edition. Yeah. The forest edition of any religion is a little.
Can I go back to something you said earlier?
Sure.
I was talking to the old guy, the bus driver.
Yeah.
You reminded me of a story. I was performing. Furman and I were performing at Knox College in Illinois, and we're in this small town, at a beautiful theater, and there's an usher there. He's an old guy. And it's almost like you can't get mad at old guy racism when it's not. He wasn't angry. He wasn't
benign.
It's just how he was. Because we go, we're just kind of talking to him because we were standing there and we're just making conversation. So we're like, oh, so is this city like mainly a college town? And he was like, oh no, I mean back in the old days there were a little bit, but you know a lot of them left. And we're like, what are you talking about? And he goes, hey, it's not a colored town anymore. We're like, but he was just so like, oh, you poor old guy.
But is that racism or vernacular? You know, I mean,
it was his vernacular. He didn't really seem to have an opinion one way or another about it.
Nor was he
an observation.
Yeah, because I always feel bad for like people my parents' age. Sometimes, like my mom will say, you know, colored or Negro or something.
I know
like
my
that.
Butthole just closes up so tight.
But
like, please
not,
don't.
But she's not in no way racist. In no way.
Yeah.
And so it always pains me when people call people out on language. Like I actually get really frustrated when people get mad about any language thing. I mean, I got mad at Marin. I don't know. I got mad at Marin because he was like calling out Gallagher during that interview he did with Gallagher about something that you
come on Gallagher
he was saying was homophobic, but actually that was it actually was kind of homophobic. So I'm actually dialing the story back but so it's a bad example, but I do get frustrated when language becomes all important. I mean, I don't know, like the Anthony Weiner thing I think is kind of a crazy example of a kind of a non-story. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about
very
it.
Very much
but
a
like,
non-story.
I mean, it's a non-story that ends in a resignation. I mean, that's a really terrifying thing.
There's worse things that have happened.
It is, but here are two things I think are at play. I mean, like, he did it. If he had done it once or twice, I think people would have forgiven him. But he did it like hundreds of times.
Oh, is that right?
Like,
I guess I didn't know that.
I guess
part
there were like 200 texts with this porn star.
He has a huge penis, though.
And then a bunch of. And you know, but what I think part of it is people. I feel like he's in a bad position. I feel like so many politicians, probably they just all do it. I assume they all do it.
I don't know, man. Like, sex stuff is just weird. That's like personal stuff between him and these girls. And like, but everyone gets weird with sex stuff, you know?
Second thing, though, why not have another Twitter account besides your official Twitter?
Oh, I know.
How are they supposed to know that he's Representative Anthony Weiner?
That was actually kind of sad, that, like, that aspect of it. Like, I have you have TweetDeck?
Yeah.
Your Twitter?
Yeah.
I can't, and I have the row for me, you know, that I... Whatever the people I follow, and then the middle, it's like my people who mention me, my at Burbigs account, and then on the right is like direct message. And I can't even imagine putting in that column a picture of my penis.
I mean,
I can't even imagine
it. Seems like a joke,
having it in the same, with your face in it.
Yeah. But I guess it's just.
This is so crazy, imagining even doing that.
I guess you just feel like, I mean, like once or twice you might go, all right, he was just fucking around. But I think it is indicative of a serious mental deficiency if you do it hundreds of times. And then you're like, well, maybe I don't want that guy making decisions on my behalf and being my representative. But I will say that we're at a time, I think, now more than ever, where people are charged with anger about their shitty lives, about the economy,
for sure.
And so the second you see someone where you can be like, fuck that guy, all the anger that you feel is gonna come out.
He got caught, he got T-boned at the intersection of fuck that guy, and I can't believe this.
Yep,
wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah,
it's just down the block from LeBron James. It's just
Yeah, the sex stuff, I feel the same way that you do, where it's like, you know, like with Bill Clinton, and, you know, people get mad when I say this. It's like, the way I feel about Bill Clinton is like, okay, he got blown under his desk, but at least he was at his desk. You know, it's like above the desk, he's getting work done, he's balancing the budget. Yeah, he's working on peace in Northern Ireland. Below the desk, he's relieving stress.
And that's not for us to see. That's why there's the, you know, that's why it's covered on the other side of the desk. We're not supposed to care.
I mean,
I know
everyone should be held accountable for their actions, but I almost wonder, I mean, I don't know what it's like to be in a position of extreme power. And if you're in a position of extreme power, I don't know what happens to your brain or what kind of ways you need to relieve stress or how... Like all the weird deviant things that everyone carries inside them starts to creep out. I just don't know.
Well, let me tell you.
I'm not saying it's okay, but I.
But I really do.
You will see it for the next year when my girlfriend's boyfriend goes on tour.
Boyfriend.
You get a picture of Birbiglia's dog.
Oh, yeah, wow. But like, you know, like you
or
can't.
Or a clit pic, you guys.
I swear to God.
A clit pic vagina photo sharing service. I'm just saying. That's what a clit pic. Okay. On Twitter.
I really don't think. It's like everyone does weird things when it comes to the. You know, like to like sex. It's like everyone kind of has it. Like, you know, the things that you do with a girl in like on a, you know, daily basis or wherever shouldn't have anything to do with like how you walk down the street. Like the two shouldn't have anything to do with each other.
But if you're married and your wife is pregnant and you're sending pictures of your dick to other people, it's like and you're doing it a lot. There's something not right.
But then what's okay? So, but you have to put it in perspective. Also, it's like. It's like that happened, and that's a big news story for about a week. And then there's the Supreme Court decision that allows, you know, private corporations to buy the government. And that's on for a day.
Yeah.
That's on for a day, and no one even really understands it.
Yeah.
And Anthony Weiner's on for, like, what, 2 weeks?
It's hate-driven, and it's news-driven because the news media knows... They know, I mean, you know, people forget news is a business. They need to sell magazines. They need to sell papers. They need to get ratings. And so they're going to put the things on that are going to charge people.
Guys.
And you can't wrap your mind around, like, that corporation would have to send pictures of its dick to the government
for
people to care about it.
Yeah. There's a reason that Law & Order SVU is the only Law & Order left on. Sex sells.
No. Oh, is the original Law & Order not on anymore?
No. I canceled a couple years ago.
Are you serious? How did I miss that?
Oh, you're probably...
Bang,
bang. Is SVU sex focused?
It's the Special Victims Unit, and as Wolf wanted
sex
to call it, he wanted
unit.
To call it the Sex Victims Unit, but NBC was like, well, maybe we can't call it that. We'll call it Special Victims Unit.
Yeah.
The Sex Crimes Division of Law & Order. And that's the only one that's still on.
Interesting.
They don't have the different cities still?
No.
They got rid of
you
that.
Sure it's not because the other ones just ran for 15 years?
Chris Maloney's leaving. That's all I've heard.
Yeah, of SVU.
I didn't realize that.
Guys, I'm sorry to break that to you.
Well, that's okay. As long as there's still a bunch of, as long as Miami.
CSI Miami.
Thank you. Forgot the words for yeah! CSI Miami. Meet the new boss. Our same as a player.
Where are you heading in the coming weeks?
Actually, I'm going to DC. I will have been to DC by the time this goes up. I'm going to the Arlington Draft House in DC, which is a great, great place.
I've heard that's awesome.
I'm doing that Friday and Saturday night, and then I'm off until I don't travel again until the Just for Laughs Montreal.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
What show are you doing there? Are you doing your own show?
We're going to do a podcast there, and then I'm doing a gala show, and then I'm doing a couple of like nerd-themed shows, and then I'll probably host, I don't know, maybe they'll have me host New Faces or something.
Who's hosting your gala, do you know?
I don't know.
I did it last summer. Steve Martin hosts my gala.
You got Steve Martin. I did it last summer, too, and I got Cheech and Chong. Actually,
that's cool, too.
They had me on Lewis Black's, and I was like,
hey,
oh,
man,
my God.
Cool too. Hey, you know, it's not Steve Martin.
They had me on, this broke my heart a little bit. They had me on Lewis Black's, and I was like, holy shit, it's going to be fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like 2 days before, they're like, yeah, Lewis doesn't really get the nerd thing, so we're going to move you. I'm like, oh. And they move me to Cheech and Chong.
Wait, get the nerd thing.
He doesn't get the nerd thing?
They said he didn't get the nerd. I don't know the real story.
Nerdist? I don't get
it. I don't know if Lewis Black. Of course, in my egocentric comic mind, I'm like, oh, he knows who I am and does not think I'm funny and does not want me on a show. The truth is, I'm sure he does not know who I am. And that's probably why he was like, oh, I don't know who that guy is. And that doesn't sound like
sure,
it's anything I want it. So he just kicked me off the show, but not in a malicious way.
Well, hang in there, Big C. I think you guys will be happy to know that Steve Martin requested me.
God damn it. That's awesome.
Oh, hey, but Cheech and Chong is
kidding.
Cool.
I'm totally kidding. I'm totally
Did you
kidding.
Talk to him?
I talked to him, but I'm totally kidding.
No, but you guys didn't tell me what you talked to him. What do you say to Steve Martin?
I spoke to him briefly. I mean, it actually is weird. It's weird when someone's as famous as Steve Martin because they're famous also in the room where people are famous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, like I went to Neil Young last month in New York and at Lincoln Center, and it was amazing. And then I went backstage and it's like Trey Anastasio's there.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jim Cramer from Mad Money. It's like the
Jim
people,
Cramer.
I don't know, like the people in the backstage, and then Neil Young comes in. It's like, oh my God. But Steve Martin was a similar thing. Like he's such an icon that it's I don't know how he exists.
Well,
because everybody is staring at him every second,
which
is that
funny,
he
is
in the room,
which is ironic because he probably hates that.
Oh yeah,
because he's very apparently. Very, I don't, you know, I've tweeted him before to come on the show, and then after,
did he tweet back?
He tweeted back, but it was a polite but sort of like a cock block for a podcast cock block.
Mm.
But I mean, he was like, oh, you know, I'm not really
That'd
doing
like
any press right
now. The
most
amazing get of all the time, right?
But then I thought
all
about it. I was like,
time.
I don't know if I could. I don't know if I could have him on. I don't know if I
that
could have him on.
That would be the greatest get of all the time.
That would be, of all of the times you have lived in, that would getting the best
yeah.
a getting. But I resolved the fact that if he ever came on, I would just talk about bluegrass. I would not talk to him about
Good
comedy
for you.
Because like
I was on a radio show with him like a few months ago, Soundcheck on WNYC in New York, and it was just me and him, and he played his stuff, and I did like a set, and so I actually got to meet him like a second time, and that was good because the first time it was like I said, it was just so many people, and then the second time it was just, there was less people, which was nice. And he was very friendly. And he said that he was going to come to my show. He didn't come, but his band came.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Which has members of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like
Steel Canyon Rangers? Is that their name?
I think that's the name now. Yeah.
I feel
great
like
band.
I would
Holy
not want to. I would not.
It's a great album.
Yeah,
just
yeah. The Crow?
Out. Yeah.
Or wait, the one from.
The one they just did with the Atheist
Jonah, shut
song.
Up. I can't. I just like to.
sorry, Big C.
That's all right.
Saw it in his eyes.
Big C's getting mad. Big C's getting mad over here. No, I feel like I don't. There's nothing you can say to Steve Martin that he hasn't heard.
Exactly.
There's literally nothing you can say about his comedy. There's nothing about how you can tell
the movies.
I would rather talk to him about what he's passionate about, because that's what I want to hear about.
You got to bone up on art.
Well, but banjo. Are you talking about banjo?
Art and banjo. Yeah.
Art, I wouldn't have shit to say about, but bluegrass, I would love to talk to him about. The truth is, he's probably never going to come on this show, so it's not.
Well, you never know.
We'll get Albert Brooks.
Love to get Albert Brooks.
We won't get Albert Brooks.
That'd be great. Did you tweet at him?
Yeah.
He's on Twitter.
He wrote back.
What'd he say?
Nothing to the effect of I'm coming on your show, but I don't care. He wrote back to me and I was
Bill Maher was a great one. And then who are your other dream guests who you haven't gotten?
Tom Hanks.
I think it'd be
fucking phenomenal. I'd love to get Harold Ramis. I think Harold Ramis would be phenomenal.
We've been talking about that. Bill Murray, of course. Recording.
If you're going that direction,
Bill Murray would be great. If you could catch him in a time where he would like open up.
Yeah.
I don't know. He might be another Steve Martin case where you're like, oh, so what was it like? And he's like, I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
I want Joe Flaherty.
Joe Flaherty would be great.
That'd be awesome.
Who's Joe Flaherty?
SCTV.
SCTV.
Oh, Count Floyd.
Yeah. Got the glasses?
No, that's Eugene Levy.
No, I know Eugene
Levy.
Do
you remember the movie Happy Gilmore?
No.
Yeah.
Remember it's like, you'll never make it, you jackass.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Do you remember Back to the Future 2?
Yes, he was in Back to the Future 2.
Are you Marty McFly?
Oh.
I have a letter for you.
Most famous credit. Yes.
Are you guys trying to prove why the show should be called Nerdist right now? Is that what
we're
doing?
We do that constantly. The show should
be... You like SCTV?
The show should be called Explicit Nerdist.
I've got something for you. It's a letter.
I'd love to get David Tennant on, who was the previous Doctor Who, would be really great for me.
Maybe he's promoting
Which Doctor Who? Curly hair Doctor Who?
No, that's... No. That's you're thinking of Tom Baker. He was the fourth Doctor in the 70s.
Did you guys watch Torchwood?
Yeah, I've watched Torchwood: Children of Earth. I did not watch the previous Torchwoods.
Oh, you mean the one that's airing this summer?
No, the
Miracle Day.
Miracle Day. Yeah.
No, the previous one was Children
Lauren
of Earth.
Ambrose, who's going to be in this film, Sleepwalk with
Tell
Me.
Tell me, let's talk about you is, and your. Let's talk about your movie. Oh,
she's in Torchwood this season.
Tell me about the movie and how the movie came about and all that stuff.
Well, it's Oh God, it's so complicated. It was a bunch of years ago, and the show was running in New York, and I was writing another movie script. It was called Waking Up Ben, actually, and it was about a guy who had a hard time waking up in the morning, and he was very much coddled in his universe. And
Ben Kingsley,
and anyway, so long story short, I sold this idea to this company that was producing the play. And they said, we'd like to do that. And then, like, in the middle of the process, a bunch of people said to me, they're like, you know, you should do just a feature film adaptation of Sleepwalk with me because the characters are there and the dramatic arc is there and all this stuff. And I was like, and the more I thought about it, the more I was like, yeah, that's true. Like, it's really... It's the dreams are so vivid and strange, and it does make for a good cinematic thing. And so I started working on it, and then with that company, and then eventually I left that company because it just didn't seem like they were going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
They were really cool people, and they had really interesting thoughts. It just didn't seem like it was going to happen. And that's the thing that in my career, I've had to walk away from a lot of stuff like that, because with stand-up, you can just stand on stage and you can perform things that you've written and you suffer the wrath or enjoy the pleasure of the audience mm-hmm. responding to that material.
Immediately. Yeah.
And with television and film, there's a filter between you and your audience, and that filter is a studio or a network or producers. And that's very, it's all in my career. It's always been very hard for me to deal with that filter. I'll be honest with you. It's I don't like the idea that anybody is saying, no, this isn't done. Cause I go, no, it's done.
Especially when you are the
you're essentially
I'm the writer, the star, the director.
You're the kind of the product, and you're like, right. No, I know how this is supposed to go.
Yeah. Right, and I've done these one person shows, and they're reviewed well, and they sell.
No. Your show needs a donkey. People love donkeys.
Right, and so I just don't. But then I understand where they're coming from too, because they have to front $5 million or $7 million, or whatever the budget is, or even $1 million.
You should find that out since you're directing the movie.
No, I'm saying, now I'm making the micro budget version of it, yeah. Which is I'm kind of cobbling together financing from a bunch of different places. And these days, I mean, it looks like we're going to shoot, on the red camera. These days, it's like you can shoot on the red camera and make a beautiful, beautiful film for next to nothing. That looks so close to film.
Yeah.
And certainly for what you're gaining in creative freedom, I think that the cost analysis is completely worth it.
Yeah.
And so now we're making, and Ira Glass is producing it.
That's
as
great.
An independent producer, and I'm directing it, co-directing it with Seth Barish, who directs my shows. And Lauren, unless something, barring some kind of crazy thing that happened, is starring in it with me. And we're shooting it this summer, you know, knock on wood, but and very, very soon, it's kind of all consuming in my life. That's right great. Now.
You've been making shot lists, like, and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, and we've been I've been shooting some little demos and things,
oh, nice.
And some little filmed rehearsals.
That's awesome.
Do you have a DP?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun to watch. It's fun to watch your career and watch you, you know, branch out and start experimenting in different spaces. Where it's like, oh, he's doing stand up, but now he's doing a one man show. He's got a book.
Yeah.
Well, now he's doing a movie. You know, like it's kind of fun to watch that sort of creative bulb.
And film is the thing that I've wanted to make feature films since I was, you know, probably 15 or 16 years old. And I in the last few weeks shooting the demo of the feature, I experienced this thing that I haven't experienced since I was 19 years old. And I walked on stage and did stand up for the first time, which is I'm shooting this thing and I'm going, oh my God, this is what I'm supposed to do. I can't believe I didn't do this sooner. That's how I felt when I did stand up the first time. And I felt it a few weeks ago when I shot this demo of the feature, and it's exciting. I mean, maybe it'll be a complete failure, but it does feel like I'm breaking into something that I'm going to be doing for a long time.
That's really fantastic. Well, I hate to, now again, we have to cut off the interview because I have to get to the airport and you
Me
have
too.
To get to the airport.
Same deal.
But I honestly could talk to you for like 3 more hours.
I know. I love hanging out.
So I think, we should
do this a few times a year.
I'm telling you, you can totally be a recurring guest on the show. Yeah. Whenever you're in town or I'm in New York, you know, we'll get you back on and just talk.
I think the starting point should just always be Florida.
Florida.
Yeah. It's yeah, and then we should just go from there.
From there, yeah.
We should just discuss our feelings about Florida at that moment.
At just
and then see
moment.
Where that takes us.
Do you think it'll be that much different from any other point in time?
It's just about our own all of our personal feelings
and
about
how we're
Florida
feeling about
at
it at
that
time,
point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Florida.
So one of us is going to be like, I don't know, starting to kind of feel okay about Florida.
Whoa.
See? And then we'll take us to him.
That's a Florida moment.
Tune
understand.
In next time when DeRiglia is on.
In Florida in 2 weeks.
Hey, don't save the, don't ruin the next episode.
What will Matt say?
I did live in Florida for a little while. My mother's from Miami. My dad lives in Central Florida. So I've spent quite a lot of time in Florida. The humidity is just too much for my body.
Thanks a lot, you guys.
Thank you very much. Oh, and people should buy your album, Sleepwalk With Me.
On iTunes.
On iTunes. Get up there. Let's not make Mike Birbiglia an example. Let's not make his success an example of how bad things are going.
Boy, if
the media can make anything negative.
I get it.
Come on, Mike Birbiglia, the Melvins of comedy.
Oh,
that's
not that bad, though.
Yeah.
Oh, was your drummer almost in Nirvana, too?
Good one.
Enjoy your burrito. Everybody. Enjoy.
Enjoy your burrito.
That guy doesn't play with him anymore. The guy from Big Business now.
Good one, Jonah. That's a really good one.
Are we still recording?
Maybe.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Carbonite Online Backup. Easy, automatic, unlimited backup for your computer files. Try it free for 15 days at carbonite.com. Use the offer code Nerdist.
I feel like I was blindsided.
Because it's a competition show.
From the producers of Jury Duty and The Bachelor.
We have scoured the earth for the 14 greatest reality contestants that were available during our production window.
Comes a reality competition show about reality competition shows.
Nobody has dared to find out who is the actual best at just being on a reality show. I'm your host, comedian Daniel Tosh.
It's win or go home.
Each episode, our contestants will face new challenges that will test their strength and lack of life skills for a chance to win $200
million.
$200,000.
Prepare, because it's about to be ugly, crying, lots of fighting.
Tayshia, I have to defend myself.
Celebrating 25 years of reality TV with your favorites.
I have diarrhea. You cannot do this to me.
What in gay hell have I got myself into?
The GOAT, premiering on Freevee and Prime Video on May 9th.